Just say the first thing that comes into your head, man. Fire. No, man. I mean the first thought. Think back. As far as you can remember. Fire. Come on, man. This isn't funny. What about you? Air. Air. I just couldn't breathe. Ah, it's good. Very good. Well, what about yourself? Oh, me? Water, I suppose. At least I said water! Right out loud. Sometimes you couldn't tell who was talking in all that confusion. Our voices would blend together, run apart. Someone you'd talk to, appeal to, try to placate and come. He'd rush away and someone else take his place, a perfect stranger. You just go on talking to make yourself heard. Hurry, hurry. If we tumbled out of the sky, we couldn't have been more giddy. Just say the first thing that comes into your head. How do they do it? And with such apparent ease, rushing back and forth, their eyes all over your body, your arms, your face, even into your eyes. It burns holes in your clothes and makes you choke. The smoke fills your eyes. It stings. Go on. Go on. What? Are you still here? What are you doing here anyway? You don't belong here. With us. Why don't you just get out? It's in their eyes now. If he could only just cover his. But he can't. He has to hurry, hurry. He has to find some way to get up and get out without actually making it seem as if he is running away. No, really, it's not all that serious, man. He'll hold on tight if he can just make it through here and remain with them now. It'll be all right. They do like him. They've always liked him. They care for him. And that's why they keep saying over and over, what? Are you still here? Why don't you just get out? Everything is red hot when you touch it. It gives off little vibrations. The hands, boneless and perspiring. The legs losing their spring. And in their eyes, something crests, banks, flickers out towards you in tips extraordinarily long and red. Eyes that mirror something that is happening behind you. But what is happening behind you? Really, man, you can get so excited, so ridiculous at times. They'll put it out. It'll calm down. It's no one's fault. We can just watch it from here. Get out of control for a moment, but even then there wasn't a moment of danger, really. What? Is he still in there? Holding on tight? Well, we'll make short work of that. They smile. They laugh at these particles in panic. He's trying to prove something. They put on leather masks that go over the head with openings for eyes, nose, mouth. Leather sleeves reaching from the shoulders to the wrists and black leather gloves. Whatever is needed. They come toward him from every doorway. They know he's in there and they stalk him down. To her, the church is full of dead wood that goes up in a second. But in there somewhere is a living creature who sits up on its haunches and eyes the flames. She wants to call out, to get up and run back, to run out. Well, if you don't like it here, why don't you get up right now and go back? No, that's impossible. When everyone's watching, you can't just get up without a word and walk out. Full of dead wood. A spark, a bit of cigarette ash, a rag mixed with paraffin, a careless eye. That is all it would take. All these booths, these displays, they could all go up in a second. Look here, she says. What's that? When they come toward her, full of friendliness. Look in there. It could collapse in a second, she says to them. She wants to warn them. She points a bony finger. It's collapsing around you. I mean, around us. They look up with a sudden, shocked stare. To her, the church is full of dead wood that goes up in a second. But in there somewhere is a living creature who sits up on its haunches all day and looks at her. He's in there, she says. No matter what you say, he remains in there. He's still there. You'll have to go back in and find him. We can't leave him in there to die that way. You don't fool us. People who pretend they're something they're not, why don't you just forget about him? If he wants to stay there, let him stay. I think when the time comes, he'll crawl out the back way anyway. He's not a total fool. If we were to go back in there now, we'd probably step on him. I wonder why he just doesn't come out and save us the sport of finding and falling on him and then just dragging him out. Whenever she is with them now, she always tries to get a good look at the nails in their shoes. One of them made a habit of touching his feet to hers to let her feel the nails. One such touch brought on immediately organs in her, and a high, rolling voice that sweeps her away. It sometimes happens that right in the middle of these conversations, a touch of the nails brings on elevation. At night, she was forced to imagine them, her friends, having themselves measured for boots, and herself hammering horseshoes onto one of them or cutting off his feet. The sight of them, and still more the touching the studs on the boots and counting them, the sound of gaucho pump steps on the street paving, caused her, like the sight of nails being driven into boots, indescribable shuddering. To sit hunched up on cushions in front of a good open fire. One evening I found myself in this position again. We were alone and they went through the room to get something from the mantel. Instead of stretching out their legs clean over me, they trod jokingly upon me, meaning to show me what they would do with hay and straw. Naturally, I chimed in with a joke and laughed. They stretched their nailed heels to the fire, and while holding on to the cornice of the fireplace, stretched one of their elegant boots in the shine of the fire to warm them, looking down on them the while and laughing at my heated face. I have often hurried along behind them at a bazaar or garden party, simply and solely to see if the grass they've trodden on is slowly standing up again after their feet have tramped it down. And I also see with pleasure steps leading up to an altar or down to a room as being something which demands pressure with the feet. You wear beautiful boots. I would like to try one on. Just a minute, I mean. Still, one must be so careful. All it takes is one good twist of the ankle now, one good careless laugh, and you can tip over backwards into the flames. No, it's all in her imagination. How she saw them take their boots to the shoemakers, heard them giving orders for their boots to be studded with nails. How she hunts diligently for their imprints in the snow and on soft soil, in spongy places. She listens to hear if they're hiding in smoky places. She listens to the clatter which they produce in the flagged streets. She watches to see if any sparks fly out from those sharp heels. And now they're just saying the first thing that comes into their heads. They're just seated around, drinking coffee, talking about the fire. It was a real conflagration, man. A disaster reported in all the papers. And they saw it right up close. No one was hurt, luckily, but some could have been. That's no one's fault. It's just an ordinary conversation. One of the thousands you have in college. You know, it's really quite enjoyable. Why does she have to take everything so seriously? What are you doing here? Popeye said. But it's in Wimpy's eyes. He's afraid to budge. Christ, stop shoving, he says, when the others rush toward him. They clog the exit. They knock his head off. He stoops to put it on and someone knocks him down. The Archbishop has to leap over him on the way out, his train held by two leaping lackeys. He gets up, cleans his hat off with his sleeve, stands still. It was like he had locks all over his body. Now he tries to walk. but we give him gas. Grows limp, light-headed. Then it's easy to strip up that old black flesh from the bones without too much pain. It's a trick, you know, slipping out of your skin. But all we have to do is wait. He'll strip himself in front of us, sooner or later. All we have to do is just sit around, drinking coffee, and watch. All those Numenites reduced to ashes in less than 5 minutes. Oh, it's sad. The Archbishop had to come and bless the kissing booth. Let me up! Someone called under him. Kiss my ass, he explained.
No, really, try as you might, you could find nothing to say against it. The more you resisted, the more you laughed. Oh, my God, stop it, you're killing me. Oh, that's good. It's like a good leak.
I'll just take a look, you say, when you go down into their rooms, but suddenly they've got you in laughing stocks.
I'll just take a peek and run right back.
Crack. You didn't expect it to be so funny, huh?
No, I didn't, says Olive. Even now, I don't really like it.
Oh, well, it's a little time before you become accustomed to it. I can do it now.
You can't be so sensitive. You have to swallow big chunks without chewing, you see?
That's right. And still, it is not yet calm. At the top of the stairs, as I see Popeye's leer and Bluto's loud laugh, the fire flickers up. The great door opens a crack. A hand reaches out. Everything, Sweet Pea's chess game, the poster of Jane Avril, Bluto's bottle, Popeye's cocked eyebrow, more remote than the fire.
Do you remember?
Pluto says a little louder, and Sweet Pea looks up.
Remember, Wimpy was talking to a priest, old Foxy Grandpa.
And he says, suddenly right to the priest,
can't you see? Can't you see? Everything's collapsing around you.
I mean, us. It was a dead giveaway. An attempt at being irrelevant, to depart from the debate we were constantly having, was constantly made. Still, I know they are carriers. They have thin, white teeth as sharp as hypodermic needles. They know their little bites hurt. It hurts, says Popeye, rubbing his eyes. He's got something in one of them, a bit of cigarette ash, perhaps, and it makes him squint, wink.
Can I see? Says Olive, and she starts to get up, but he says,
No, it's all right, it's nothing. He wants to get back to it. He and his brothers like to get Olive and myself down here and do things like this. Down the stairs to their apartment, a bare green room with a friable partition made of bamboo and string beds for sitting, a tense bed that doesn't give, near a dingy, dish-filled sink and a wood stove converted. Here, emanating from the lavatory, is always a kind of vague odor of dust and urine. It is just like a stage set. Just as expected, Wimpy whispers to me, we'll just stay a little while longer and then run back. On the stairs, he hunts for a railing, with the act of warding off a blow, but of shutting his eyes to avoid a stream of boiling water. Here now, he says, trying to straighten up the odd position, slouched down on the bed in the wall, flattened out, makes it hard. Here now. Now that's going too far, Papa. That isn't funny now. No, it's terrible to talk that way if you want my opinion. Which they don't. They like to see their amorphousness engulf him. He forgets, breathes in, takes in a good gulp, and gags underwater. He is positively to shout and bang his fist sometimes to keep his position firm.
I believe it's getting late, Dolph says. The dorm will lock me out if I don't get in. I really think I'd better run.
There's something oozing and cowardly about it that makes me furious. But a gaping hole opens up inside me. I have to make an effort not to pursue her, not to call her back, to speak to her once, just do anything, to beg her. Perhaps it's still not too late. Perhaps there is still time to run back. But she does not run.
Popeye has his eyes on her and won't let her go. Do you have to, Olive? She agrees, smiling her contracted smile. Finally, she looks right at him. Her eyes take on a hunted look. She squirms more than ever and holds out the tips of her bony fingers. Her voice becomes tiny, all but strangled. No, seriously now. Half in and half out of the door, he just stood there, as if he wanted someone to drag him across, bound, hand and foot. It's an exquisite combination of the high and low. And at the same time, it sweeps everything before it. The impertinence, the omnipotence of wit. It starts in a warm, luminous shade and gets hotter. A flicker, a gleam. And then suddenly, raging up into a crackling howl, the laughter fills the room and breaks out into the street. It was like an explosion. No, really. What is this indescribable joy which glows in laughter and knows it will cease with a stroke when we leave here, when we shut doors behind us? This gives a certain pain, a certain desperation, which the laughter hardly understands. Ah, the policemen already have a few clues. I wanted to stretch out, to last and warm me, and draw us together like a heavenly refrain, which suddenly breaks in upon our ordinary hilarity and holds the note long after we thought it was impossible to go on. A joy which cools and refreshes like a breeze, a breath of air from the trade winds which blows around the horn to the everlasting habitations. Now listen, Wimpy, I'm serious. Foxy Grandpa's gonna canonize the corpse tomorrow. Really, heartbreaking. You know how crepe cape paper goes up when its fire hits? You should have seen his expression when he saw it. His fat little cherub cheeps like backsides and hiding his hands in his coats as if they were hurting him, as if he were a thalidomide baby. He stands just one side of the door, barring his own way. Threading his way through the hordes of children, huddles of tricks, treats, toys, and booths, the squat, untidy O.G. Watasnozzle S.J. waddled over the ruins of his buried church and weak and flabby hams. He stooped slightly as he walked. Seen from below, an enormous belly hung suspended from a yellow straw hat. The dust of the reservation still clung to his coat and hassock. Seen from the side, baggy corduroy pants of indeterminate color hid beneath the outswept cassock and its black curve. He stood for a moment eyeing the kids, almost menacing, as if he would like to part them with his hands. Then he moved toward the chaplain, keeping his hat on, a sickle of shadow hiding his scowl. He mused bitterly as his rambling eyes investigated the cleanliness of the church, its antiseptic, fluorescent light. He cursed beneath his breath in Latin, fingered the papier-mâché drooping from one booth, and thrust it rudely back into its place. It had come drooping down in his face like some jungle vegetation. And then, stopping a few steps from the chaplain, he muttered, "The holy burning name of God, degraded to the level of a charity bazaar." "How do you like it now, Father?" said Foxy Grandpa, the chaplain, trying to buck him up. "What? How do you like it now?" "The new church?" Oh, gee, what a snozzle is this. Jay's voice was husky and deliberate. He spread hairy fingers on the page, kept them spread. "English? I can't pray in English. Sometimes I pray like lightning in Latin. Sometimes an imp flies into my head. In English. American." At the last word he scowled, pinched his nostrils, and trumpeted their contents into the cactus garden. "And how is your mission, Father?" "Like the potato famine. They dance in front of their god, and they turn their backs on him and dance to their rain god. And when they're finished, they would sit up on the roofs and watch God the Father move across the sky. The sun. He clapped his palm to his forehead.
Well, he wanted them inside, and if the right Reverend Archbishop didn't like it, he'd bring his altar outside under the mesa where they could dance all night under the sky. But of course, that was not for a Jesuit to decide. They were not reformed yet. Not them, not by a long shot. They still had to submit. Didn't he have to submit when the right Reverend Archbishop? Youth must be served, O.G. Had the old cathedral torn down to satisfy the young Dominicans. The Dominicats of Nealman, he called them. And now he must appear and smile and act as if this place was quite as good. No better. A curse on it. On the church, Father? No, not the church, on the change. On the new, on the always and continually new. An evil day when English is spoken with the dead of someone and Christ is raised again on his cross. No, the dead will never be summoned in English. Not them. They know when they're being insulted. What's the use? They don't care. Shame they are, lest it look like magic. Lest the Protestant look ill. A black day. He'll love the Indians better than his flock of arrogant pups. Who knew everything and wanted everything clear and new. May it be ground to a powder.
What? The church?
No, that new church. The new church may be ground to a powder, I say. A curse on them. He glared about him at the half-grown boys and girls who crowded the gym, overflowed into the tennis court and the parking lot. That tennis court where his old church was, that devil take him. What was going to become of Catholic youth? What would stop this new brood from overthrowing all the barriers? He knew them all. They were Americans first, youths first, free first. Catholics last. Brazen, selfish, unbridled. But it was piety and observance. Where was mystery, veneration of the dead, a deference to the dead? In the earth. Vagabonds. Indians are better. They are closer to Ireland than this place. Foxy, Irish. They may think he's Irish, but they'd never let him in Ireland. Even today, they brought him a painting of Christ. He looked like one of their dancers to him. Leather skin and eyes focused up on the sun. And this Christ was holding maize and wheat in his arms. And he's wearing a loincloth with yellow lightning slabs through it. And to think when he was exiled out there, he thought he would lose his mind. And now he loved them more than his soul. Sometimes his heart beat at Mass when he would turn around to bless them, and he felt he was back in Ireland. He would have to write to the Archbishop for permission to hang it in church, and the Archbishop might sit on it for a year. Curse him, he'd hang it tomorrow. In the place of honor, above the stations of the cross. Damn it. These cardboard Catholics, these whites. What, was he turning against his own race? Was this his last shame, to be turned out of his old church, and now to turn against his own people? Was he losing his grip? Corrupt generation. And to think he had hit the bottle when the Archbishop had first sent him to his letter. Hating the assignment, hating the red men, hating the smell of donkey and dog and sheep shit, and the glare of the sun in his eyes. Now he had made his peace. In fact, that he'd die anywhere out of Ireland, out of the Cathedral of Ampleforth. He wished to die out there. Youths, freethinkers, turds. They had laughed at him behind his back when he had said he loved the Latin and had loved the Gaelic of his native Cork. But American, at Mass, that was a newspaper language, a movie language, a professor's language. It had no splendor, no soul, no heart. A way without a heart. A black day. Who is that old geezer? Whispered Popeye in a loud whisper to Wimpy, who shhhhed him, and said, Father Watersnozzle. He was pastor at the old church before they tore it down. He's invited here for the opening. Honored guest, I guess. Do you know him?
I've known him since the fourth grade.
Why the fourth grade?
I was a server then.
You were a server? With that old geezer? Oh, man, far out. Shh.
Don't speak so loud, he'll hear you.
He's probably deaf and dumb. It's obvious he can't see a thing. if you only knew, says Popeye quietly, how much God once meant to me. And as he talks of the little churches he used to go to as a child, I seem to feel myself melting into him, into his falling away. It seemed to me at that moment that I was myself and the person I was going to become. This strong, determined, free person with a logic of steel and a certain regret. At this ghosting hour, our outline seemed to be breaking up and our ghosts took over. Our carapaces and daytime faces cracked on every side. Someone with a loud voice and superhuman force must come and remold the masks, cut off the fur, drown the fire, remove the obscene pictures from the missiles, pull us apart, and pull me together. I hear my voice, a funny, too adult-sounding voice now, proving how reasonable we can be. It was astonishing the depth of our common experience. You felt there, one said as the other nodded, below your feet still, in those great dark churches where no one spoke English. You felt there that you're actually at the land's end of the old world. It seemed like the ultimate encampment of the fishermen. Precisely like the fishermen who have lived since the world's beginning, facing the everlasting kingdom of the sea fogs and the shadows of early morning as you got up and walked toward early mass. The church where our mothers brought us as a child, built in the 12th and 13th centuries, seemed to come out of some geological layer of marble and slate near the core of the earth, and to be part of immemorial nature, contemporaneous with the great phenomena of geology. And at that hour, darkening the door of the church lit up at the far end with three or four old women in stalls, as remote from human history as the ocean itself, or the cumulus clouds with their sorrowful mothers parting from sons facing their destiny, the boats falling away down the deep trough of a wave, in stone as deep and veined as the eternal snows. Thunder. Thunder of voices. Thunder of silence. In the frescoes there stood how many of the faithful clustered upon a promontory of the shores of hell, at the foot of the cliffs of death. So our wonder was great, like one who is taken out of the sea where he has lived since birth and has to breathe and walk about on non-existent feet. Those deep sea plunges, detaching us from the people and the days, were masses which drew us down into darkness, watched over by shaggy, blunt-faced apostles, the sad-eyed virgin from the porch. We could scarcely breathe for joy that all this was our common bond. Could scarcely breathe to think that we had looked up at the lightning. We had heard the thunder and been deeply moved, shaken, felt in the thunder over our hearts beat, enjoyed the thrill of moving through trees with the winds, curled up in the curled shells or horns which encircle the altar. Expanded our cheeks in imitation of the angels who blew the trumpet at the crack of doom, so that we understood what the Latin was saying after all, understood each other far better than sweet pea or Bluto knew.
God is leaving us, God is leaving us.
What was there in those days that there no longer is? There were longer silences. The skies would grow gray and clouds form symbols which we understood in a glance, and we were carried forward through the forest while waves dashed against the sides of the wildest coasts, beside churches as rugged and precipitous as cliffs, to finally creep within and shake the water from our furs, and above us in towers the seabirds would be wailing. Now, and all we loved and dwelt in for so long had been taken away, and a strange language and a jerry-built existence substituted for the unsubstitutable. We wanted to burn, we wanted to howl, but our air, even the air we breathe, was gone. We suddenly felt the terrors of decompression, the air cut off, taking away with it all the seabird's charm, the deep boys clanging, excluding them because they weren't too disturbing or too unnatural. We felt as if we'd belonged to one of the Orphic cults that suddenly, one day, vanished from the face of the earth. All the dancers driven into the city to hear one of the antiseptic orations of Pericles, and the sacred groves roped off, condemned, and burnt. Really now, Wimpy, just between you and me, we're all alone here now. Olive is asleep, I think. She's reading or asleep, I don't know which. Everybody's gone. Tell me. You don't really believe all that, do you? Do you? Just between you and me now. He seems to have become gentler, drawn closer. There's something intimate, almost brotherly in his tone. Wimpy feels a totally different person than he was before he met Popeye. And yet Popeye is like a person he has always been hiding. A little tiny, shadowy creature. A green, smiling, earthy creature. All movement and particles, laughing, abandoned, moving through life and trying everything, free. A kind of horseman with a flashing sheaf of arrows, which, like the Zen archer, he pulls out and stakes into his bow. Suddenly, surely, and then without even looking, shoots straight into the heart. Walking with him in lockstep is like riding, rising one's hooves over the peach blossoms. He is big, powerful, a force of nature, with the teeth of Gargantua. Ha ha! Insatiable! A revolutionary! His steps are enormous. He takes whole streets with two or three galumphs. He doesn't wait for street lights. There aren't any cars coming. All he needs to do now that Popeye has made this discreet appeal, is just make one sign, one little shrug. Not even that. The flicker of an eyelash. Some sign that, of course, inside, they are brothers. They are one. And the opaque substance between them will blow away. Popeye will never mention it to a soul. The slightest blink, the slightest shrug will do. One good laugh. Ha ha! Yes, it'll be a laugh which will shake us free. Come now, come out in red laughter. One good bark of delight. That's all. Just one little shrug, one little laugh. All he needs to do is forget himself for a second. Forget himself or become himself. You believe that you believe, but you don't believe. Isn't that right? It's not really half as bad as you thought, huh? Well, I must admit, just one more step now. Just one more step, and you burn your bridges.
Burn my bridges? That's impossible. I couldn't.
Impossible?
No.
Just take one more step, man. Then another. Follow me. I'll show you how.
Stop! What's the matter, Olive? Stop! Don't do it. Don't let him get you. He'll get you. He's trying to destroy you. I know it. It was you. It was you.
What do you mean, says Papa?
Me? What are you talking about?
Shh, she doesn't know what she's saying.
Here, Olive, what's the matter? It was you! You caused the fire!
What? What are you talking about? What fire?
You did it with your boots. You kicked a candle into the straw.
Olive, Olive, you're hysterical. You're talking nonsense.
This is crazy. She actually believes that story.
Oh, Olive, Olive, he was putting you on. Nothing happened.
It's not me! It's not me, she says.
What?
Hold her down. Here, she'll do some damage to herself. I didn't want to do such a thing. It's all around me now, the fire. Don't you see it?
Fire? What fire? Wimpy, do you see a fire?
I
I don't see any fire. Look, look, Olive, you're among friends. Nothing's happened. Does she act like this often? She's never been like this before. I've lost it. Get some hot towels. Here, lie down. Olive, what have you lost?
Everything. I've lost everything.
She's shaking. Get that blanket and we'll cover her up. You're all right now. Olive. She looks up and smiles at him. There, you're all right now, aren't you? It's nothing, don't you see? He puts his soft, caressing hands on her forehead. He knows just how to soothe and calm. After all, he has such a good heart. He is human, after all. Lie still. You've had too much conversation for one night. Sleep. Shh. She's sleeping now. Let's go get a beer at Okie's. They're laughing now. But the whole business. Think how excited they got, huh? They're getting to be very good friends. It's just another one of those intellectual arguments you often fall into in college. Just a conversation. They look back on such talks with nostalgia. No, really. What fun we had, you know? It was good to banter like that after the tension of school. And it's good to feel, isn't it, that we can be intellectuals with tough, critical minds and still be friends? She'll be all right. Just let her sleep. As you get into adult conversations, you've got to expect a little discomfort, huh? They're not going to carry you along on a pillow forever. Her eyes are a little red. Well, you know, it's probably just a little cigarette smoke, that's all. It's really funny how a person can get panicked over nothing.